Viva la vegan! Hi, I'm Lee Chantel from vivalavegan.net, and today I have animal rights activist Chris Delforce with us. And you may know his website, aussiefarms.org.au, and you may have heard of the new Australian documentary, Lucent. If you have not, I'm sure you soon will. Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And so your website, aussiefarms.org.au/pigs/Lucent, that will take people to information of the new film.
That's right.
And you also have other websites. And let me know if I'm missing any, but I've got the Aussie Farms one, aussiepigs.com.au, aussiechickens.com.au, and aussieabattoirs.com.
There's also Aussie ducks and Aussie turkeys and Aussie eggs.
So tell me a bit more about why you started all of those websites, not just one.
Well, it all started a couple of years ago. The Aussie Pigs site started when we found and exposed a place called Wally's Piggery just outside of Canberra, about 20 minutes outside of Canberra. And we, over about 2 months, collected footage and photographs from inside and then released it to the public. And there was such kind of a public outrage of what was shown there. He's actually closed down that piggery and his other one that he's owned near Young, New South Wales, have both since closed down because we put this material out online on this website. So the idea was to make it as easy as possible for anyone to access this information and this material. And then the industry's response, of course, was that it was a one-off isolated incident and didn't represent the industry as a whole. So we thought we'll prove them wrong. And then the site turned to be focused more on the industry as a whole, with more and more exposés of big farms coming out, showing the same conditions, the same issues at every single place. There's now 34 up on the website. So the idea is just to show what the industry standards are,
so what they're getting away with legally. 34 places?
Yes, across the country.
Mm-hmm. And various states?
Yes, that's right. We've just released footage from 3 places in Western Australia. So there's now New South Wales, Queensland, Victoria, South Australia and Western Australia covered on the website.
And not just pigs, it's other animals as well.
That's right. So there's after pigs, I think turkeys was the next one to come. And there's footage and photographs from inside a turkey farm in New South Wales. Again, just showing the standard conditions that you'd see at any turkey farm across the country. And also an egg site, which I think there's maybe three places up on there at the moment, all within New South Wales, and focusing mainly on battery cages. But there'll be more exposés coming up on that, also looking at issues relating to free range and barn systems. And then the chickens and ducks websites were in conjunction with Animal Liberation New South Wales. So there were basically campaigns run by them, and I've done the websites and incorporated into my sort of Aussie Farms network of sites. And it's just, again showing what the standards are.
So when you say the standards, so I assume that the industry has specific things that they put in place that are meant to be adhered to, whether you're in Queensland, whether you're in Western Australia. So seeing the footage from various places, I'm sure you have seen whether these things are adhered to or not. What have you found?
Well, a lot of the things that it's not so much adhering to specific guidelines, it's what the guidelines allow them to get away with. So things like cutting off the tails or the teeth or cutting chunks into the ears of newborn piglets, it's perfectly legal across the industry, and it's done in pretty much every single pig farm. Issues like confinement, so there are very loose laws essentially relating to how pigs can be housed, pigs and other animals can be housed, so generally they'll be tightly confined, whether in a cage on by their own or packed into a small pen with dozens of other animals.
Fly saying hi. And so when you see all this sort of stuff, and I guess some of the feedback from the industry or the backlash that you've had from the industry is, oh, that's just a once-off, that's just that person, for example, Wally's Piggery. So people are saying, oh, it's just that particular piggery or that particular owner of a couple of them. What would you say to people when they say these sort of things?
I'd say that we can see many of the same issues that we saw at Wally's at these other 33 places across the country. So the way that the mother pigs are confined for weeks on end, Wally's didn't even have sow stalls. And there's a lot of talk about places going sow stall free. Wally's was sow stall free and it was still horrific. Things like, as I say, the mutilation of piglets without anaesthetic, that was done at Wally's and it's done across the country as well. The slaughter on site, Wally's would bludgeon pigs with a sledgehammer. And we've actually seen this happen at a large abattoir in Victoria a few years ago. Animals Australia exposed it. And we've also started focusing on the more common methods of slaughter, which are which involve sending the pigs into carbon dioxide gas chambers, which I'd say are much, much worse than anything we'd seen at Wally's. And yet, this is a system that the industry swears by and says is absolutely ethical and humane.
So is that just a new system?
It's actually been in Australia for over 20 years now, mm-hmm. at the largest pig slaughterhouse in the country, and roughly 14 or 15 others now. So I'd say it accounts for over 90% of pigs killed in Australia.
So is that a cheaper method of killing than the others? Is that why it would be used?
Absolutely. When they've got large numbers of pigs, it makes a lot more economic sense for them to send three at a time into these cages that go down into the gas chamber. And they're doing that every 30 seconds. So before, they'd have to be, if they were using electric stunning, which is the main alternative, they're supposed to hold the stunner on them for 10 to 15 seconds per pig. So it takes a lot longer. Whereas now they can get through 2,000 or 3,000 a day using the gas chambers.
That's full on, isn't it? So why do you do so much work with pigs in particular?
I think that pigs are very relatable animals. A lot of people can, some people have pigs as pets, but people can easily see the similarities between pigs and dogs. And in my film Lucent, I do try and make it clear how intelligent and friendly and personable pigs are. They each have their own individual personality traits, likes and dislikes, fears, all of that, just like your household pet might. And it's not to say that other animals like chickens or turkeys are different, because they do have their own personalities, they do have their own individual traits. But I think pigs have something about them that are more relatable because they're closer to what people have in their own home in the form of dogs or cats. So it's easier for them to make the connection that these are not, they're not food, they're living, thinking, sentient beings.
And can you tell us a bit about, the undercover investigations that were done by Animal Liberation New South Wales and ACT of Wally's Piggery, there's a lot of charges that came about and closures that happened. Could you tell about the process? So you got the footage, you or other people had the footage, and then what was the process?
Well, we submitted the footage to the authorities, to the RSPCA, the police, the DPI, Department of Primary Industries in New South Wales. And shortly after receiving that, they marched in. They did their own raid of the property. But apparently someone within those authorities had tipped him off, so he was able to clean up the worst of it. However, RSPCA kept coming back and doing their own investigations over the next few months. And they ended up charging him with 53 counts of animal cruelty, and that is based on just what they found in their own investigations, because they couldn't use our footage because no one was willing to put their name to obtaining that footage, so it would have been very difficult to use it in court in a prosecution against him. So in the end, it didn't matter too much because they were still able to lay 53 charges on him just on what they'd found.
Does that seem like a lot? To me, that seems like a lot of charges.
Yeah, well, I suppose I didn't know what to expect. I think a lot of what we do see is legal. So I wonder what exactly he was charged with. I'm not sure what the nature of the charges were. It may have been 53 animals that he failed to euthanize, something like that. Whereas there would have been far more problems. There were far more problems at the piggery than just 53 animals needing to be euthanized.
Mm-hmm. And then from these charges happening, what happened after that? The piggeries were closed down, or that piggery in particular?
He phased out his breeding at both of his piggeries, or at least at his one outside Canberra. And so he was, it seemed at that stage, he was just growing out the pigs he had on site and not breeding anymore, not getting any more in. And over a period of maybe 6 months, he phased out and closed down. And I think that was largely due to the public outcry from when the footage was put out, because he was getting calls in the middle of the night from across, you know, from other countries around the world, telling him, you know, telling him what they thought of what he was doing there. So I think there was a lot of public backlash, and he mustn't have wanted to deal with that anymore, so it made more sense to close down. But we were also hearing the abattoir workers where his pigs were going didn't want to touch his pigs, didn't want anything to do with it, so his options were being limited.
Wow, so that's pretty good. Even the abattoir workers are, like, on the other side. And so, what, you know, when you're saying, like, this sort of direct action that's happening and people getting involved, whether it's undercover filming, it's, you know, putting it to the people that can make some changes happen, or it's people calling up places and people they disagree with, these would be seen as some sort of a direct action thing, and maybe not so much of that has happened in Australia. Do you think that's something that will take off a bit more?
Well, with each piggery that we do expose, we try and put up the phone numbers or email addresses or other ways that people can contact the companies. We put up the details of the directors, because we want these people to know that what they're doing is not okay, and people are starting to find out that it's not okay, and we want to make it easy for people to voice their opinion. But also we want to create this sense within the industry that the secrecy they rely on is being broken down, and things are not going to continue the same way they have for decades. They're going to have to start changing and potentially start thinking of new ways to make money.
And so I'm not sure if you're aware, but in the United States, there's quite a lot of issues in regards to the law and animal activists, whether they're breaking or not breaking the law, or what the law sees as them breaking the law, and in particular going into different places that getting footage that is not legal. How do you think this will affect Australia?
Well, we've already had several politicians in different states talking about the need to introduce ag gag laws like they have in the United States, or even animal enterprise terrorism laws like they have in the United States, the latter which would deem any act that causes economic harm to an industry, even just protesting, they would deem that as an act of terrorism. And of course the charges for an act of terrorism are huge. And then the ag gag laws seek to remove the ability of activists to get this information, to get this footage out into the eyes of the public who need to see it for themselves. They need to be able to make an informed decision about what they're supporting. So ag gag seeks to make it illegal to publish material online or to send it to media or for media to publish it. It requires that footage be handed over to authorities within 24 hours so that longer investigations, such as the 2-month investigation at Wally's, could never be conducted, because it all has to be handed over straight away as soon as there's an inkling of wrongdoing. But the other issue with that is that much of the footage is showing legal practices, so even when it's handed over to the authorities, if they wanted to do anything, there's nothing they could do, because there are no breaches of the law occurring. It's just standard day-to-day practice. But they've seen, in Australia, they've seen that these laws have almost backfired in the United States, because people are beginning to ask, what are they so desperate to hide? So in Australia, they're framing it in different ways. They're calling it different things. In South Australia, they were calling it the Surveillance Devices Bill, and they were trying to make it out as though it's an issue of personal privacy, where people might be flying drones into each other's backyards and watching them through their windows or something like that, or installing hidden cameras in their bathrooms. This is the analogy that they use. So they're trying to get people to think that it's an issue of personal privacy, but hidden away within that, that bill was a law that, that would have made it illegal to publish any footage, regardless of where it came from. So even if it was sent to us anonymously, as an organisation, we could be charged $75,000 just for publishing it or sharing it. Or as an individual, we could be charged with $15,000 or 3 years in jail. So this is in addition to existing trespass laws, which are perfectly adequate for what is actually happening, where people are trespassing onto private property. That's what the issue is. But they're trying to make it into something bigger so that there can be bigger penalties to dissuade people from gathering and publishing this footage.
And I'm sure, you know, both of us have a lot of mutual friends that are involved in these sort of things. Do you think it has dissuaded people to not do undercover missions, to not gather this sort of evidence?
I think it's hardened their resolve. I think, or in the case of the South Australian bill, that was recently defeated. So that's showing the power of public opinion and the right that the public has to see what is happening inside these facilities. And that's what it comes down to. More and more people, I think, are getting involved and are realizing what's happening behind closed doors and are wanting to film that and get it out to show other people. So I think there's always going to be risks of getting caught and getting fined and being imprisoned or even being killed by an angry farmer. There are always these risks involved, but the fact is that people need to find out what's going on, because when they do, any compassionate person would not support it, and the industry knows that.
Are there any tips that you could give that you might have heard over the years that can be that animal rights activists can use if they want to get involved in this sort of thing, whether or not you agree with it?
I think if you want to get involved in any sort of animal rights activism, I think the first step is to find out what sort of groups are around you and just start helping out where you can at protests or doing stalls. If you're interested in getting into, you know, gathering footage yourself, obviously I can't encourage anyone to break the law, but I think safety has to be paramount, because it's a very dangerous thing to get into, and I think security culture as well. I get the impression that people might want to go and do this sort of thing so that they have a story to tell their friends about, or to tell their family, or to tell anyone who asks. And of course that can be very dangerous, because it risks not only themselves but anyone they've worked with or anyone they've talked to about it. So I think being very security conscious is probably one of the most important things you can think about.
And beware of, in this digital sort of age, people that post things all the time about, I just did this or I just did that.
People love to post it on Facebook.
Yeah. And they tag all their friends with it. And it's just like, that's probably not very wise. I find that people that talk the most are the ones to rely the least on.
Yes. Absolutely.
So I want to talk about your new documentary, Lucent, now, Chris. And so the Wally's Piggery, this is what inspired quite a lot of things. And so from this footage you got, what made you decide, oh, I'm going to do a documentary with all of this? Was there just so much footage?
Well, I now have footage from around 50 places across the country, and much of it is the same. And I'm putting it out in, you know, 3 or 4 minute clips online, but I get the impression not many people are watching it, or they're seeing it's the same as what they've seen before. So I wanted to put this into a format that people can sit down and watch, or show their friends, show their family who don't believe that these things happen in Australia. And it goes through the issues one by one and shows these issues occurring at multiple facilities to show that it's not just an isolated incident. But I think the turning point for when I committed to the idea of making a feature-length documentary about this was when we received footage from a farm called Lansdowne near Young, New South Wales, where it's about 8 minutes of unedited footage of an activist walking through a sow stall shed, and the sows, it must be about 1,000 of them, were all screaming and banging on their cages and trying to escape. And I think seeing that and seeing their desperation and their fear, it just brought home to me how unjust this whole thing is. Unjust or unjust? Just this whole thing is, and made me want to do everything that I can to show people what's happening and to bring a stop to it.
And I liked how you mentioned specifically about Australia, because a lot of the documentaries that we have either show footage from the United States in particular, some in the UK, some Europe, or they have facts and statistics from those countries as well. So in Australia, even though these things happen, we have maybe not had something like this before.
People don't think it happens. People don't believe it. They'll see a documentary like Earthlings and they'll console themselves saying it doesn't happen here. We look after our animals. We care about our animals here. We'd never do anything like that. The truth is, of course it happens here. It happens all over the world. Australia is not magically an exception to that. The fact is that the huge demand for meat and other animal products necessitates this kind of horrific treatment. So there's no way that we could be farming animals by the billions and treating them well or giving them any sort of humane or dignified death. And of course, that's not even talking about the notion that slaughter can never be humane if it's unnecessary, which it is.
And so you received crowdfunding or crowdsourcing for the campaign to create the documentary, and you got about almost $12,000 from people. That's really encouraging.
Yeah, well, we didn't even have that much of a following at that point, but I think people recognise the need for something like this. They recognise that this is a new thing. We haven't had anything like this in Australia, and it's something that we need to have so we can show people who claim that it doesn't happen, or that if it does happen, it's just isolated incidents. So people recognise the need for it, and we're very generous, and yeah, we got well over the target of $10,000.
That's great. And so you've had a few screenings already. You've had in Canberra, in Sydney, and in Perth. How did the screenings go? How were they received?
Very well. I've had almost entirely positive feedback, in the sense that people found it very powerful. I think a lot of people came out very affected by it. And from what I've heard, it's still, the images are still in people's minds. So it's difficult for me, being so close to this footage and having seen it so much, I become a little desensitized to it almost. So it's hard for me to know what is graphic or what is difficult to sit through. But from what I'm hearing, most of the documentary is very difficult to sit through. But people are not regretting at all that they've seen it. They think it's important that they're able to see this and understand what these animals are going through so that they can better communicate it to other people.
So when you sort of say about the footage in it, it sort of reminds me of Earthlings, the documentary, and that is a very hard documentary for lots of people to watch. I remember in a cinema watching it, and people left and right of me were crying or walking out. It was just really intense being there. And so if you could compare the two, were they similar in that aspect?
Well, I definitely had Earthlings in mind as the inspiration for the film, and I wanted to create the Australian Earthlings almost. Mm-hmm. In the end, it's kind of become a bit of a it's nowhere near as difficult to sit through as Earthlings, from what I've heard, but it's still very difficult. So I think it strikes the right balance, so that I haven't seen people getting up and walking out of the theatre. People have sat through it until the end, even though they've found it very difficult to do so. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that maybe a bit more easily
digested,
mm-hmm. yeah, or easy to get other people along and sit through it, whereas you may have difficulty doing that with Earthlings.
Yeah, not as bad as Earthlings can be a tagline.
Yes.
And so who would go along to see the film? Who do you want to go along to see the film? Who's the target audience for this?
I'd say that the primary target audience is actually animal rights activists and vegans who know a lot of these issues themselves, but have friends or family who never listen to them, don't believe them. I think it's a great film for people to bring these people along to, so that they can truly understand the reasoning behind going vegan or behind becoming an animal rights activist. And I think Earthlings had that same power. And I know a few of my friends went vegan because their friends invited them over and forced them to sit down and watch Earthlings. And I've already heard from the Perth screening, for example, there was someone who brought their meat-eating husband who never understood, well, was supportive, but never quite understood the idea behind veganism. And has come away from it saying they're not going to eat meat again.
Wow.
So, and other people who have come out of it saying they're going vegan, not going to eat any animal products again. So that's, I think that's a testament to, I suppose, to how powerful this footage is, but also the fact that it's so well hidden. And people just, even people within the movement, don't know about everything that's going on behind closed doors.
And Chris, you sort of mentioned before going through all the footage, how do you deal with this? I find I ask this to people who do undercover work all the time, and you going through the footage that other people have got, and I assume there would be hours and hours. How do you deal with that? What's the process?
I think a lot of it becomes the same. I mean, it's not easy, but you start to see the same things happening over and over. And for much of it, you feel very angry that this can be occurring, but that just translates into a desire to do everything that you can to put a stop to it. And for me, that was putting it into a film. So if I was watching it and had no idea of what I could be doing, then it might have been more difficult for me. But the fact that I had a goal for it, something that I, you know, I had a reason for looking through it all in a way that could help to stop what I was seeing, I think that made it much easier.
So, like, direct your energies into doing something positive for the movement.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd be more upset if I wasn't affected by this footage at all.
Yeah.
I think it's great to get angry. It's great to get upset when we see these things, if we can then find a way to channel those feelings into something positive.
Definitely. And so I'd like to hear your vegan story. Why did you become vegan in the beginning?
Well, I was vegetarian for around 9 years, and I'd never really thought about dairy or eggs. I hadn't looked into it that much, but from what I had looked into, no one was talking about those issues. And I made friends with people in my local animal liberation group who were vegan and started just showing me how easy it can be. Small things like substituting animal margarine for vegetable margarine or Nutrilex, something like that, or showing me what the good soy milks or oat milks or almond milks or rice milks are. And when you start to see those things, and even fake cheeses like Cheesley, I don't want to call them fake, but you know, vegan cheeses have come a long way, and you can eat anything that you could eat before as a meat eater, now as a vegan, and have the same enjoyment for it. And it was kind of making that realization, I just decided there was no need to continue consuming animal products. But also at the same time, Animals Australia had come out with their campaign about bobby calves. And I had no idea that cows, I'd never thought about it, that cows needed to give birth in order to produce milk. And then what happens to those calves? Most of them are killed, whether on site or at a slaughterhouse. So the idea that milk is death-free or suffering-free was a fallacy. And same with hens in the egg production system, where the male chicks are ground up at a day old, and all the hens are slaughtered in around 18 months, regardless of what housing system they're in. It occurred to me that all this talk about free range and higher welfare, it's just talking about better ways to do the wrong thing, to do an unnecessary thing. So from that point on, I think it was, I didn't look back, and it was very easy for me, a very easy transition.
How long ago was that, Chris?
It was about 3.5 years now.
Cool. And so what are you working on next?
Well, many things. For a start, I'll be putting Lucent out online and on DVD, because I want to get as many people as possible to see it, and I'll be encouraging people to hold a screening themselves in their own lounge room, get their friends and family together. But after that's all done and dusted, my next main project is the repository, the Aussie Farms repository, which I'm also crowdfunding for at the moment.
Can you tell us a bit more about that?
So the repository is an online database of footage, photos, campaign materials like flyers, industry documents, anything essentially relating to animal exploitation in Australia. So it'll be broken down into categories like food, entertainment, clothing. And within those categories, there might be broiler chickens, turkeys, pigs, and then within each category, again, there'll be all sorts of tags. So the idea is that if you want to, for example, if you're a small animal rights organization with limited resources, you want to run a campaign on broiler chickens, you'll be able to go to the repository and find the most recent footage that anyone across the country has uploaded of broiler farms. And you'll be able to find flyers that other groups have done about broiler chicken farming, and just download that, and there's your campaign ready to go. So it's about sharing resources, sharing all this footage that at the moment I think is just gathering dust, not being used because it doesn't suit the current campaigns of whoever collected that footage. And it's about making it all easily and publicly accessible, so that if someone wants to find out what's happening in a particular area of animal use in our country, it will be very easy for them to do so.
Sounds like another small job for you, hey?
I think it's going to be a few years of work to build it up to the stage where I feel that it's in some way complete, because I keep coming up with these new features that I can add to it. And I want to make it a very, you know, the most comprehensive collection of evidence against this industry that has ever been gathered. So it's going to take a lot of work, but I hope to have at least the basics up and running so that people can upload their own material early next year.
Good. And so, Chris, tell me, why is it important to open up the doors and light up the dark?
Well, I think the industries rely on being hidden away out of public sight behind closed doors in darkened sheds. They rely on people not knowing what they're doing, because as soon as any compassionate person finds out what they're doing, they're not going to support it anymore. So this is why piggeries and abattoirs don't hold open days, they don't have tours, because they know that what they're doing is wrong, and that people, if they knew the truth, wouldn't support it. So the work I'm doing is about increasing transparency in an industry that relies on secrecy.
Great, and some really great work you have been doing, Chris, and the team that are around you. If you'd like to see Lucent, make sure you check out the website. Will there be a quicker website in the future?
Aussiepigs.com/Lucent.
Okay, and there's some other screenings coming up, one in Melbourne, one in Adelaide, and one in Brisbane. So check the website out for more information and for more things that Chris is involved with. Thank you for taking the time to chat to us today, Chris.
Thank you.
And see vivalavegan.net for more interviews with inspiring vegans.